Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Greg, thank you very much for that. Now, Agriculture Minister Charlie McConlogue is on an agri-food trade mission to China and South Korea. It's the minister's second visit to each country within 18 months, following the reopening of both markets to Irish beef. And the minister joins us now on the line from Seoul in South Korea. And you're very welcome, Minister, to the programme. Before we talk about
good evening,
that trade
Sarah.
Mission, good evening to you. And before we talk about that trade mission that you're on, I might just ask you about the latest report we heard of yesterday from the Climate Advisory Council. And it's saying that the agricultural sector, the largest single source of greenhouse gas emissions, it's saying it's still way off achieving its legally binding targets of 25% cut in emissions by 2030. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I think there's a lot of alignment. I broadly welcome the report from the Climate Action Council, the annual review yesterday. I think there was very significant alignment between the report and the priorities set out by the Climate Action Council, and indeed the work we're doing in agriculture and food and the farmers are doing across the country. And I think it's important to note the progress we are making, Sarah. Last year, for example, we saw a 4.5% reduction in emissions from Irish agriculture. And that was on the back of a reduction, a 1.5% reduction the previous year. And that's down to a lot of the good work that farmers are doing, and also a lot of the significant supports has been put in place by my own department. And that's something that we'll continue to step out. And obviously the role of the Climate Action Council is to assess that, look to see
and keep the pressure on us to do more.
Yeah, and
you're saying there's a lot of alignment, Minister, but their assessment is that it's not going so well. They say, for example, the target for next year was a shift to 90% use of protected urea fertilisers. Currently it's at 45%. You have to double it within a year.
Well, like if you look, for example, at what we've achieved with reducing fertilizer overall over the last 2 years, it's massively significant. Our target was to reduce it by 10% over that time. And what we've actually achieved is reducing overall fertilizer usage by 30%. In relation to the move from unprotected urea to protected urea, that is something which we're seeing significant progress on. It's something that I will be putting a particular focus on to deliver more. And I fully believe we will deliver more. I believe we will get to very shortly a stage whereby we won't see any unprotected urea used, and it will be entirely protected urea. And also we'll see a situation as well.
Will you reach the 90% target in 2025?
Well, it's quite possible, but we're working very hard to achieve that. And I think, you know, very often the focus is on the negative aspects and the issues which we have more work to do on and which we are working on. But it's really important here to recognise the real progress we are making. And the 4.5% reduction in emissions, Sarah, last year is no small achievement. And that's something we look to, to replicate again.
It's small when you consider that you need to get to, 25% in 5 years. You know, 4.5% is really, you know, it's literally a fraction of where you need to be. Can I ask you about the early finishing of cattle?
I would dispute that, Sarah. 4.5% is very significant. It's very hard earned. It took a lot of hard work, and it shows the momentum that we're building up, and that's something we'll continue. And listen, okay. I mean, the role and work that the Climate Action Council is carrying out is one we respect and is an important one. And we'll continue to make the progress, and farmers across the country deserve the recognition as well that they should be getting for the very significant progress and the ongoing work they're doing at farm level. And
so will you listen then to the Climate Advisory Council when they're saying that the government needs to roll out urgent support to incentivise farmers in the rapid uptake, for example, of biomethane, where farmers produce silage and other inputs, that needs to be supported urgently by government, they say?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with them entirely, and that's exactly what we're doing. Just about 2 months ago or 6 weeks ago, Sarah, I launched a €40 million investment for biomethane. That's something which we will be issuing the grants for very shortly, with projects to be finished by the end of next year. So that's something we are doing, and it is an area where we can make a lot of progress and where a lot of work is underway, and I'll continue to support that.
I just want to ask you finally, before we move on to the trade mission, one other issue raised by the Advisory Council yesterday, and that is forestry. They say it's a real challenge now. Forestry in Ireland is in decline, to the point where, instead of being a climate sink here in Ireland with forestry, we're actually one of the only countries in the world that's going to move into our forests being a source of climate emissions. And they're saying we need to invest right now very heavily and roll out new forests. Now, I know you did, or the government did announce a programme in 2023, that was meant to lead to 8,000 trees a year being planted. Is that going to happen this year, 8,000 trees a year?
I think it'll be really challenging, and it's not likely to meet it this year, but it's certainly not for lack of government incentive or indeed for putting funding into this sector or the area we have under the country.
What will it be this year, do you think? Sorry to interrupt you, but what do you think it'll be?
Well, I think it's hard to say at this particular point in time, but certainly last year it was just over 3,000 hectares, Sarah. So,
yeah.
But what we have done, and if you look at what we've done in forestry...
So do you think it's likely to be similar to that again this year?
It's hard to know at this point, but it's going to be unlikely to meet the 8,000. But listen, we can't go and plant the land ourselves. So, but what we are doing is, and I'm working, and there's been really good work done here by Minister of State Pippa Hackett as well. What we've done collectively and what we've done as a government is put a massive investment into this. So we've committed 1.3 billion euro to a forestry programme. We've increased the number of years for which farmers will get premiums for now from 15 years previously to 20 years. And we've also increased the premiums by about 60%, up to 60%
annually. And you were told by private foresters in January that it wasn't going to work because there's too many restrictions on where trees can be planted. And it sounds like they're right, because you're telling me that this brand new programme that was launched in 2023 with 1.3 billion euro behind it still means that once again we're going to miss our targets. And I mean, it sounds vastly miss our targets, like we've vastly missed our targets every year since you've been in government, to the point where our forests are becoming a source of climate emissions.
No, I think you're missing the target here, Sarah, because what we're actually doing is we're actually increasing every year the amount of area under forest. Any forests that get harvested have to be replanted. And also we're planting new forests as well and investing massively. You're making the point there that the areas that can be planted is too restrictive. But the reality is here that when we go back to the 80s and 90s, much of the area that was planted at that time wasn't suitable to be planted, wouldn't meet the criteria now in terms of actually reducing emissions, and actually would actually lead to emission. For example, deep peat soil leads to more emissions being released than captured if you plant in that. Now, what's happening there is actually some of those forests that were planted on soils which wouldn't be allowed to do now are reaching harvest point. And obviously, as trees grow, they capture more harvest, more carbon a big tree does. And what's happening now is where appropriate, they're being replanted with smaller trees.
All right.
And they in time...
We'll see where we get to by the end of the year in terms of targets.
I'm confident we'll make real progress here. But the key thing is we're providing real options and funding to farmers here.
You're on this trade mission to China. You're now in South Korea. China has launched an investigation into EU subsidies for dairy farmers. Would you be concerned that our dairy trade with China could be under threat?
I'd be very confident that we can respond. And I took the opportunity in meeting my government counterparts this week as well. It was a timely opportunity to reiterate the confidence we have in Ireland in terms of the fact that all of the schemes we have in place meet World Trade Organization rules and regulations. And we're working with the European Commission to respond and provide the answers that are being asked by the Chinese government in relation to that. And that's something, given the strong position we have, that I'd be confident we will be able to find a positive way forward on. But as a country which is very fortunate to be able to produce much more food than we consume domestically, with 90% of our food being exported, it's really important that as a government and as ministers, and I'm here this week with Minister of State Martin Hayden as well, that we're out in markets advertising and growing the markets and improving the value of the markets for Irish farmers' produce.
Trade with China particularly hasn't been that awfully strong. I know it's reopened its market for Irish beef. What can be done, do you think, to improve that?
Yeah, well, visits such as the one I'm on now and the meetings that I've been having along with Board BIA and also with Enterprise Ireland are really important in terms of growing that. But there is a situation where demand has been lower generally in the Chinese economy in the last while. But that makes it even more important that you keep those relationships and keep building those. And there's been particular changes as well, whereby, for example, infant formula was a key product we were supplying into the Chinese market. And we have seen the birth rate in China half over the last 6-7 years. So that's obviously led to a reduction in demand for infant formula. We see particular opportunities now for senior nutrition, for sports nutrition, and also for food for special medical purposes, which our dairy sector is very well placed given how advanced and how invested we are in cutting edge research and technology to develop those opportunities. And listen, where I am speaking to you from now in Korea, in Seoul, we have a wonderful opportunity. I visited here as a whole of government trade mission led by the Taoiseach last November. We've reopened for the first time ever, beef access here, and we're here with many of our beef companies this week. And there's a really exciting opportunity here. It's the fourth largest beef importer in the world, Korea.
All right.
Similar size of country to ourselves, but and a very significant consumer of beef. And
I just want to ask you finally, Minister.
The result of this visit to significantly develop this market now over the time ahead.
Okay, just finally and briefly, if you don't mind, we heard Justice Minister Helen McEntee today saying that religious orders need to contribute to a redress scheme significantly. But we've seen in the past, a lot of the time, they don't. They just simply don't. Can they be compelled to do so? Do you think so?
Yeah, well, I think that's something we have to look at very closely as a government. I was listening to Cormac's interview there earlier with Margaret Best and the experience of her son, Kenneth, in Lotta in the 1980s. And unfortunately, that was the experience of too many in our school system, and particularly in special schools in that instance. The government has put survivors very much at the centre in relation to stepping out the scoping report, which reported this week, and we'll make sure that survivors stay very much to the centre as we go forward. But
you think the government should look at whether or not religious orders can be compelled to pay?
I think that absolutely has to be one of the key considerations we give. It hasn't happened in the way the commitments were made in the past, but the responsibility for running those schools and for keeping those children safe were the orders that were running them at the time. And it's something that the government will consider very, very carefully, Sarah, because those survivors deserve to have their voice fully heard, deserve justice, and deserve redress for the way that impacted their life. And that's certainly going to be central now to how the government follows on from the scoping report's recommendations.
Mr. Charlie McConnell, thank you very much for joining us.